All right, today we're going to be talking about the French Revolution. This is part one of the French Revolution. So I understand that it's not a pear deck. It's set up like a pear deck. So do your best to do it on the side to see if you're right. I put the answers built into the presentation so you can follow along just like you're in the class. If you feel like it, you can compare your answers later on. So you can see right off from the beginning here, we have a fairly violent little beginning here to the French Revolution. Give you a tone of where we're going in this. This is probably one of the worst, bloodiest conflicts and revolutions throughout human history. So it's going to be pretty intense. It's going to be a fairly large unit with a lot of ups and downs. So it's important we take some notes and pay attention so we can keep track of how it's going because it gets really confusing at some points. All right, go ahead and click the next slide. So homework. Homework for this unit, like it says here, is based on who is in charge of France in real life when we are talking about the time period. So the class will equal the people and I equal the king. So whoever is in charge at the end of the presentation or whatever we're talking about, they will get to decide who or if we have homework at all. So that's how this entire unit will go between now and the end of the academic year. All right, let's go ahead and click to the next one. All right, so we've got to start with the seeds of revolution, where everything begins, how all these issues happen. So we kind of understand what France was like at the beginning of this. That's why we watched the movie. That's why we did Versailles. That's why we did Louis XIV reading. We understand what life was like, how the royals were treating people, some of the negativity. But let's dive deeper into the realities of that. So go ahead and click again. So here's your first pear deck question. What was the government of France? So take a second, pause this recording, figure out if you can guess what the government of France was like. You should know this. All right, you should have already done that. Go ahead and click to the next one. Here it is. It's absolutism. So I put it down there. It's absolutism. Okay. Absolutism is when the king is the sole person in charge of all aspects of the country. So there is no person that can debate him, overthrow him, or overrule him. Nobody voting on anything. There's nothing. It's just the king. So just like you saw in the movie, it was just Louis making decisions. That's all it is. So that is gone even further past where we left that movie off. And remember, that movie was fictional in itself. So that sort of ruler, the bad guy ruler, continued on in his footsteps, and so did his son and his grandson. Let's go ahead and click again. This is who we're up to now. That is Louis XVI that we're up to now, who is ruler of France. So you can see he begins ruling in 1774, right before the American Revolution. He is a non-charismatic person. That means that he's just kind of flat. He's not exciting. He's not really fun. Nothing about him. He's just a stick in the mud. He's boring. People consider him weak-minded, weak-willed, a weak speaker. Just overall, just kind of a pathetic, worthless kind of a dude. Nothing great about him, but he's born into the position, so he gets to be king. And like I said here, he's more into the luxuries of life and not really the leadership that is required, as you can see in the picture. I mean, look at all the tapestries, his chair, his shoes. So very much like his grandfather, Louis XIV, the Sun King. You can see not much has changed, but at least Louis XIV was charismatic. People believed in him and were inspired by him or felt threatened by him. That was not the case in any sort of means with Louis XVI. All right, go ahead and click again. And this is his queen, Marie Antoinette, a pretty famous person. You might have heard of this before. So she was the queen of France. She's actually from Austria. She's the Duchess of Austria. So they married her off to Louis so that way they would have an alliance. She is pretty well known for not being in touch with the realities of the world, being brought up in a royal society, always been, you know, kind of on the high end of life, never really had to work for anything. So not fully in touch with what's going on with reality and all those around here. All right, go ahead and flick it again. All right, so here's another pear deck thing for you. French society. So I want you to try to guess, how do you think French society is organized? And actually go through these like we're in class and, you know, write it down in a script paper, try to run through your mind how you think French society is organized. You got a couple of images, pictures there to give you a guess. I'll give you a second here. All right, hopefully you've paused or guessed or something by now. If you haven't, go ahead and pause this. but society is broken up into three really easy organizations, okay? So your three really easy organizations, the first one being, well, they're all called estates. And the first one being, well, you'll never guess it, the first estate. So that one being the clergy. So that's any member of the church is the first estate. So if you are a priest, if you were a bishop, a cardinal, no matter what it is, you are in the first estate. So they're all contained in that member of society as the first estate. They are extremely powerful and rich. As we've seen throughout all of the time period that we talked about, the church has gained power, gained influence. Their lands are unbelievable, especially in France. So they are extremely powerful. Now, your lower end priests aren't overly rich and powerful, but they do have some privileges that come with it. Many of the higher end ones lived like extreme nobles, so like lower kings and things like that. So had unbelievable wealth, unbelievable income and all that stuff. But here's the crazy part. They did not pay taxes at all. Even though they're the biggest landowners in all the country, they didn't pay taxes, even though they had some of the most money in all the country, and didn't pay a single dime in taxes. And in case you didn't know, taxes are what you utilize to pay for the government, to make things work. They don't just magically happen. The king needs money for all those fancy high-heeled shoes and all those wigs he's going to wear. All right, go ahead and click the next one. All right. So, in all these, if you notice at the bottom of the pair deck, you can see to guess the percentage. I want you to try to figure out what percentage of the country these all represent. So, of course, the second group of people would be your second estate. So that's your nobles, your landowners, your rich, your wealthy, the people that have been passed down in inheritance, all of the money that they've always had throughout all the time. So all your old money from feudalism, all that stuff, this is still here. So they had power because of their wealth. Their money, like we've always talked about, money makes the world go round. That's where, you know, their money is. It's a really straightforward, obvious group. But the crazy thing is they did not pay taxes. Didn't pay taxes on anything, even though they were super wealthy and over the top rich, they never paid taxes on anything, which is crazy to think about. So you're leaving very few people, the most powerful, the most rich, not paying taxes. Because, of course, the king's not going to pay taxes. So try to think in your head, what percentage of people of France you think was the second estate there? All right, go ahead and click the next one. So, of course, the third estate is our last one, is everybody else. So if you're not part of the church, if you're not super duper crazy rich, then you are part of the third estate. So this is middle class, your farmers, your peasants, your gutter rat people, all those people are all part of the third estate. So you got a wide range of money there. But when we say middle class, it's not like an overly nice middle class. You know, you're pushing it. You're just above the poverty line. And this is the crazy thing, is that this is the tax group of people in France. Out of all the estates, this is the only one that is taxed, okay? And they are burdened significantly, but they have no money to pay it. So their money difference between taxes and what's left over for their life is extremely small. They don't have much at all. So it's a very unfair, unequal system. And here's even the bigger kicker. They had no say in government. The clergy had a say in government. The nobles had a say in the government. Of course, the king had a say in the government. But they had none at all. They're the biggest population of people, clearly, if you haven't guessed. And they are the most tax-minded people, but they have zero say in government whatsoever. So you can see where this was already going to make people angry. But this is how life in France had been for a couple hundred years. They were used to this. But eventually, as all things happen, they get sick and tired of this stuff. All right, go ahead and click to the next one. So this third estate is kind of broken up into two different areas. So on the left, very obvious, you have your peasants. You're extremely poor. Okay, so 9 out of 10 of the third estates were farmers. Okay, so they lived out in the countryside, not very many in the city. Now, granted, there was a lot of people in the city, but most people were still living out in the countryside, still farming. These people were the poorest of the poor, as you can tell by the picture. I mean, you're talking scraps of clothes, collecting wood. They are the absolute worst peasant. Nothing has changed from the Middle Ages kind of society. Now, the other side, though, is the bourgeoisie. Now, you might have heard this term, like someone's bougie or something like that. But that's where it comes from, is this group, is the bourgeoisie. And what the bourgeoisie stands for is they are the middle class. This is that part of the Third Estate that is a little bit better off, but they are the middle class of France. Okay, so they are not rich, but they're not dirt poor. So they got some stuff. They're doing all right. These are typically your merchants, your lawyers, your doctors, and your traders, things like that, which is crazy to think. A lot of these people, lawyers and doctors nowadays, we see that as those are pretty upper class people, pretty wealthy people. But back then, you're kind of looked down upon. These are, you know, the nobles were long time money, big time money, more than just like, oh, I studied and became a doctor. Now I have some money. No, you're still middle class. You're still bourgeoisie. So you can see how society was messed up. You couldn't pull yourself out of it. You couldn't just become a noble or work your way that way. Even if you're smart or got good education, that just wasn't going to happen. All right, go ahead and click the next one. All right, so my question to you is, what were the bourgeoisie famous for? So you were supposed to draw this one. Were they famous for their candle making, for their clothes, for being doctors? What were they famous for? So take a second to do that. All right. By now, you should have done that. Go ahead and click the next one. So they famously wanted to look rich, the bourgeoisie. Like all people, when you are below someone else, you want to look like someone that's higher above you, someone that's got a more higher social class. So they wore over-the-top clothing. So you can see in all these pictures, these are like super over-the-top attention-grabbing clothing. Look at the hairstyles of some of these people. Very flamboyant, very colorful. Very long coats. The color was their main thing. They loved to use color to show their flamboyancy. So these weren't like high-end clothes, but the bourgeoisie would wear these clothes so they would look more like the nobles. So it was a competition inside themselves. So you can get where someone's bougie. It comes from this concept of how these people were and how this portion of society dressed. They were really trying to separate themselves from the rest of the Third Estate. They were like, oh, I'm not with those peasant, poor, gutter rat people, you know. Look at me. Look at my pants. Look at my striped shirts and stuff like that. So that was kind of their philosophy. All right, go ahead and click to the next one. So this is how it broke down percentage-wise. So you can see in this pyramid here on the left, we got First Estate, the clergy, Second Estate, the nobility, Third Estate would be your peasants and your bourgeoisie. So your First Estate was about 100,000 people. They owned 6% of the land of France. That's a crazy amount. 6% belonged to 100,000 people. Now, remember that 100,000 people includes priests and stuff like that. They're not owning anything. They just work for the church. So you're talking high-end bishops, cardinals, archbishops, things like that. They have all the land ownership. They get all this money. Your nobility makes about 400,000 people. So you're talking 20% of the country is owned by them. So you're looking at 500,000 people and they have 26% of the entire country, which is crazy. And then finally, the lowest, the Third Estate, is 24 million people, and not a single one of them owns any land. They are not allowed to, due to their state and society, to own any land. So when you hear people talk in the news, it's like, oh, the one percenters, or the 1% of the world has 90% of the economy and things like that. This really happened. Now you can see this in France. The amount of people that owned land to the amount of people that didn't own land was totally messed up. And we know the money is even worse in this situation. So it's a pretty messed up society organization. Of course, the person at the top of all of this is the king, who's got more land, who has more money and all the power, and all the taxes are going to him. So you know there's someone even above all of this, which is crazy. All right, go ahead and flip it again. So you can see it's just a better way to put it. So out of, I think it's whatever this group of people is, looks like maybe over 100 here. You can see which would be the nobles, which would be the clergy, and then everybody else if you filled up a room. And so all your power was located in those yellow and red people and all the people that were left out. Remember, no say in government whatsoever, no voice, no nothing. Absolutely nuts. All right, go ahead and flip it again. So why might people be upset in France? So take a second, write this down. Why might people be upset? Make a little note to yourself. That'd be like, I don't know, a great test question or something. All right, go ahead and go to the next one if you haven't done it. And here's an idea. So you see this, you know, kind of silly jousting gif. But here's some of the reasons why they're upset. They were still paying fees from the Middle Ages. The nobles and the kings were still charging taxes for things that happened hundreds of years ago in the Middle Ages. We're talking Crusades time. They're still charging them. It's like, oh, yeah, remember that crusade we went on like 500 years ago? Your family still owes us money for that. Remember that castle I built 500 years ago? Yeah, you guys still owe us money for that. So they are still paying fees from things that happened way back then. So of course people would get angry for that one. So go ahead and click on the next one. They tax everything. There's super high taxes on everything. The number one tax thing would be bread. Okay, flour for bread and stuff like that. But absolutely everything is taxed. You're talking milk, paper, bread, you name it. It was high tax. Remember who pays taxes? Only the third estate, not the second or the first. And sure as heck not the king. Go ahead and click the next one. There's super low wages. Money is real low. These people don't want to pay them for doing the work. So your nobles and stuff like that, they're like, no, you owe us this work. So the money is super low. So you're being taxed super high and you're not getting very much money. So you're not having money left over for things that make you happy, whether it's for your children or whether it's entertainment or whatever it is. You don't have excess money for that. Or maybe it's schooling or buying a better place to live. What? You just don't have that. So they are squeezing out all the money they can out of the third estate with no concept of what it might do to them. Go ahead and flip to the next one. There's also no ability, all these things together, there's no ability to change social classes. You cannot just magically move up. The idea of the Crusades and going and killing people or magically taking money from somebody, all of that is gone. There's no more of that anymore. You can't go and just, oh, all of a sudden I'm a doctor and now I'm a noble. Nope. You're still in the third estate. You're still bourgeoisie. You still got to pay a lot of money for taxes and things like that and get no say in anything. So it's a pretty messed up situation that you have. And so you can kind of see this where we saw this before. So it's history kind of repeating itself. We didn't run into this issue with feudalism because the Crusades saved us in that situation. But now we're seeing it. It's like, oh, there's no Crusade. There's nobody we can blame this on. What are we going to do? All right, so go ahead and flip to the next one. They also had to pay manor dues. These are on top of the taxes they had to pay for regular things, income tax, food tax, stuff like that. So they had to pay these taxes so the rich could live in their lifestyle that they're used to. So you would work their land and pay them money so they can stay wealthy and rich, which is absolutely absurd. And they would literally punt it off. It's like, oh, I'm used to this lifestyle, this custom lifestyle, so I need you guys to pay me money so I can do that. I mean, the king was extremely noticeable for that, but all that trickled down to the nobles and stuff like that, they would do that as well. And say with the clergy, they would tax the heck out of everybody so they can continue to live their life in luxury while everybody else suffered. And people went along with that for a while. They're like, oh yeah, they've always been like that, so that's definitely something that they need to do. All right, go ahead and flick to the next one. So hunting people, you know, some, I have no doubt somebody in the class would be like, oh man, if I was starving and didn't have any money, I'd just go hunt and, you know, I'd feed myself, it'd be fine. Well, they thought of that. They made it literally illegal for you to go hunt. You were not allowed to hunt on any of the lands because that's the noble's property, or that's the church property, or that's the king's deer. So you couldn't even go out and feed yourself. If you were caught hunting and say you killed a deer or even trying, you could be in prison for life or executed for that because you killed something that was of the kings or of the nobles. So you couldn't even go and protect yourself in the most natural way ever, which is absolutely insane. Go ahead. So flick to the next one. So what happened is finally the king's noticing everybody's getting upset. And he's like, all right, everybody put all your complaints together. And they had called the cahiers. Okay, so the cahiers, so the king and the nobles asked the people to put them all together and all the reasons why they were unhappy. So they did this. They put all these cahiers together and then, you know, send them to the king. And now if you go to the next one, there's some other things. Because, of course, that's not enough. There's so many more things that are making the people angry. So go ahead and flip to the next one. So here's a little video you will see here from an old movie. Kind of give you an idea of what the king is like. So go ahead and pause it here. Watch the, you know, the 3-minute clip to give you an idea. All right, so you should have spent that 3-minute click there of why, watching the king and how he acted. And you literally see him run over a child in that. But that was their level of arrogance back then. That was their level of just like, oh, poor people, why were you in the way of my carriage? How will you ever learn? So go ahead and go to the next one here so you can see some other reasons. Is the economy begins to tank. So the economy is how businesses work, how much money is worth in your country, how wealthy your country is in general. And that affects everyone at all levels. So economy is probably one of the more important things that happens within a country. So as you can see, it's another pair deck question. So maybe try to think in your head or write them down. Why do you think the economy would begin to tank? What are some of the reasons why the economy would get bad for the people of France during this time? So take a couple seconds to do that real quick or pause this recording. So hopefully you've done that guessing. We'll go ahead and go to the next slide here and see why some of the reasons why things are getting bad economy in France. So first off, there was way too many wars going on with France. France was fighting in just got done fighting the 30 Years' War not too long before that. But France continued to fight wars of aggression everywhere it could in Europe. One of the more hated countries in Europe at the time, literally countries would gang up against them. So they're fighting too many wars that's costing people a lot of money. That means people not only have to give money in extra taxes and such to the war effort, but they also have to donate people, their lives, their children, to go fight in these wars, these senseless wars, for really no purpose other than pride back then. So too many wars going on, which is costing the economy to go down. People are spending money on war because that's where their excess money is going, instead of spending it at local businesses and helping the economy grow. So go ahead and go to the next one. Lavish expenses. The country in itself, where they're taking the money and not reinvesting the taxes for things for the people or making the army better, things like that. People are taking the tax money and spending it on super high-end stuff. I mean, we all saw the interior of Versailles and how ridiculous that was, and that was just one of his palaces. He had multiple palaces in Paris alone, and then Versailles, which is only a few miles outside of Paris. As you could tell in the paintings and in the beds and all this stuff, the king lived, and so did the nobles and the clergy, a super rich and wealthy life to the fullest extent. And they're using all the people's money to do that. So it's a visual representation of how much better they are and how great their life is compared to the poor people or in the majority of people in France or even the bourgeoisie. Go ahead and go to the next one. Another reason why the economy is bad is they spend a lot of France's money helping the United States or the colonies win the revolution against Great Britain. Great Britain, the English, were a huge rival of the French, and the French wanted to do everything they could to make them weaker. So supporting the colonists, the Americans, in their revolution was a great way to do that. They sent us guns, ships, soldiers, some leaders. If it wasn't for the French, we would never have won the American Revolution. So helping, there was a lot of money spent, a lot of investment into that, and that had to come from the people. Somebody's got to pay for that stuff. Soldiers just don't go just to go. Even when you're forced to go, you're still paid. So helping the United States become a country was a huge expense for them. Just solely, it's like fighting a shadow war against England. It ends up paying off for them a little bit, but it's a huge expense on the people. Go ahead and click to the next one. Another issue that's going on is simultaneous with all these bad choices in leaders or fighting in wars, the crops begin to turn. Nature works against them. So people are starving to death in the countryside. Not only they're starving to death because they can't afford food or bread. I mean, the most commonly ate thing back in the day, the staple of all foods, was a pound of bread. You would buy it in pounds and loaves, like blocks. It's not the light, fluffy stuff that we think of now. Think of it as like a super dense block. And you just rip a piece off of it, and that was your meal for the day. You literally buy it in pounds, which is the crazy thing. So people are starving because they can't afford food. But now, in addition to not only not being able to afford the food, it's not growing. So there's nothing. People are just straight starving. It gets to the point where they have to pass laws of how much bread prices can be eventually, and that if a farmer is caught hiding wheat or flour or whatever it is, that they will be executed for that punishment for hiding it, even though they're trying to protect their own family. So all of these things are compounding together. You got all the Kanyes, you got all these additional wars helping the Americans, the crops, the taxes. All these things are going to come to a head and just absolutely just cause something to happen in the people. There's got to be something. It's like a zit. All this stuff is building up, and eventually it's got to pop. That pressure's got to go somewhere. So go ahead and click to the next one here. This is so it kind of goes back to what we were talking about with bread there. This is what the bread and wage earners budget was down in that in the time period we're talking about here. So you can see here on the far left is the occupation. And then you have effective daily wage in sous, so that's like their money, how much they'd get. And then the expenditure on bread percentage of their income in August of 1788 and then in February, July of 1789. So the difference, how quickly that goes up in, you know, not less than a year. You know, we're talking 6 months-ish. So a laborer, the person that works as a wallpaper kind of a person, 15 sous a day, that's 60% of their wage went to bread in 1788 in August. And then just a, you know, quick thing later, February and July in 1789, the following year, it's 97% of their wages just for food. That's nothing else. You can't spend anything else. It's solely on food. Then you got builders and laborers, $18 minimum wage, you know, sous dollars, 50% on bread, and then 80%. Journeyman masons, so someone that's becoming a better mason, you know, someone that builds homes and stuff out of brick and stuff like that, 24, 37, and then 60. It's almost double. Journeyman locksmith or carpenter, 30, and then it was 30%, and then 48. A sculptor, goldsmith, 60, and then it was 15 to 24. So all of these are just absolutely massive. I mean, this is ridiculous price jump. So you can see where people get angry, where there's less things to make them happy. People need that excess money in their life to do things that are enjoyable. Otherwise, you are just literally a slave laborer. All you're doing is working so you can buy food so you can live. There's no enjoyment left in that world. You cannot spend your money on new clothes. You cannot spend your money on your kids. You cannot spend your money on, you know, going out for entertainment purposes. None of those things. It's all gone. So you got to read some of the stuff here at the bottom here. The price of a 4-pound loaf consumed daily by a working man and his family as the main element in their diet. So that is daily you have to spend that. That is their daily requirement, 4 pounds for a family. So it's just kind of crazy the idea of how much everything costs and the direness that everybody's going to. So when people are like, oh, I'm starving, it's not like what you see around school. It's like, oh, I'm so hungry, I'm starving. Or I bet some of you right now are like, oh, I'm so starving, this is ridiculous. These people were like legit starving. There was nothing else. If you need to do like pay a doctor or something, that means you go a couple days at least without food. I mean, that's ridiculous. That concept is just unreal. Or maybe there's a hole in your roof and you need supplies to fix it. You sure as heck aren't going to afford someone to go fix it for you. So you got to do it yourself. So that means you will literally have to starve your family for a period of time, which is insane. All right, go ahead and go to the next one. So what happens is they have what is known as the Gathering of the Estates General. This is a huge momentous shift in France for the people. Now, go ahead and go again, and it explains what this. So this happens in 1789. So you got to remember, the revolution for the United States started in 1776. So kind of our revolution in the United States and them helping us and them seeing us being able to do the things that they can kind of helps inspire the people who are suffering and starving from what their ideas of injustice. So that feeds into the mentality of some of the people in the Third Estate. So here's the crazy thing. The Estates General has been around for hundreds of years as part of the French government. This is like a voting body that represents all the people. They vote on things. The king will listen to it and take it into consideration. But it's their place to talk and discuss officially and pass it along to the king. But it hasn't been called together or united in 175 years. That is unreal. 175 years they've had the ability to meet together and discuss the issues of France and how to improve them, and they just haven't done it because the only person that can call the Estates General together is the king. And the kings have never done it. They just threw the people a bone. They're like, oh, yeah, here, we'll give you the Estates General. You can meet together, you know, whenever I call it, to deal with all the issues of France. And everybody, like, forgot about it. 175 years, that's ridiculous. So they meet together, you get representatives of all three estates there. Okay, now granted, there's the same number of representatives for every estate, and the king gets the final say. So here's what happens, is they get together and they're designed to bring suggestions to the king, how to improve life for the people of France. Some of the goals is that the Third Estate wanted to get some of the power back. They wanted to have a say in government. Remember, they have no say in government other than this, which hasn't been called in 175 years, so it doesn't even really count. And they also thought it was unfair that they are paying all the taxes. Nobles aren't paying any taxes. The clergy aren't paying any taxes. And those are the people living in the extreme luxuries of the life who aren't anywhere near starving or the poverty line. And they've seen now the United States, and they're like, whoa, these people made a constitution. That's freaking cool. I want one of those. Let's make a constitution that gives us rights, gives us a straight system of government, not this kind of like made up stuff that we see on the whim of the king. It depends if we have a good king or not. And right now our king sucks and all that. So people are like, all right, we're going to make changes. This is exciting. Finally, they're listening to us after 175 years. It's time for change when it's most needed. So go ahead and flip to the next one. Here's the problem. The voting is done very simplistically in the Estates General. Each estate gets one vote. It's three groups get the vote with the king overriding. So clergy gets a vote, first estate. Nobles get a vote, second estate. And then the entire third estate gets one vote. Because of this, the continuation of the affluent arrogance, the rich people dominating over the poor, the minority dominating over the majority continues because they're like, what do we need the third estate for? Life is great for the first and second estate. Life is kosher. We're so stoked on what's going on. We don't need your vote because we have two-thirds of the vote. So they massively ignore the third estate, and that will eventually cause a huge ripple in world history that will never be forgotten. So go ahead and go to the next one. You'll see what it is. It's called the Tennis Court Oath. So here's what happened. What they will say is what happened, and what history books will tell you will say what's happened, is that the three estates have a meeting, and the second and first estate, so the nobles and the clergy, lock the third estate out of the meeting and hold the vote because they're like, dude, we don't even need you guys. Just get out of here. You're wasting our time, because he had to let everybody speak back then, and people love to speak. So this locked them out. So the third estate gets all sorts of mad, and they're like, oh, they can't do this. We're the people. Where is freedom? Where is, you know, representation? This is so wrong. And they're like, well, we're not going to take this. So they, if they're locked out, and this is all being done in Versailles, by the way, I didn't tell you. So then all those buildings we saw when we looked at Versailles, this is being done there because that's closest to the king. And the king ain't moving anywhere else. Everybody's got to come to the king. So they're locked out of this grand ballroom where the estates general are being held. And they're locked out. They're like, oh, well, we need to go meet somewhere else. So where's somewhere else we can go? So they literally go to the tennis court at Versailles. Now, this is an indoor tennis court. It's a little bit different than what we know of today, but pretty much the same thing. And they're like, all right, we take an oath that we will not leave this tennis court until some compromises are made. Now, here's the irony of the whole thing. This is a big public stage. You know, we're going to talk about it here a little bit more here in a second. Here's the funny thing out of the whole thing. The reality is they were not locked out. Now, granted, when they went to go open the doors of the place of the meeting hall, they were locked. And nobody answered when they banged on the door. That is true. That did happen. However, there was no diabolical plan by the second and the first estate to be like, oh, let's lock these guys out. Poor people. We don't need them. Boo. What happened is they had changed the meeting to the next day and just never told the third estate. So the third estate showed up thinking that the meeting's happened. They're like, wow, they're not letting us in. This is ridiculous. Oh, they're keeping us out. Wow, where's this tyranny? This is horrible. And there was, literally nobody was there because they held the meeting the next day. So this whole thing could have potentially been avoided if they would have just told them that they had moved the meeting. Because then they could have still overruled their opinions, but at least gave them a place to talk about their opinions, which is usually what people want. To a point, you can make them happy if I just listen to your issues and then talk about how I might help them, whether I do or not. So if they would have just simply told them the day that the meeting had changed, this potential whole revolution could have been changed and millions of people would have lived instead of died all over the place. This is a huge ripple event in history that simply because nobody passed on the message that, oh, hey, we're meeting tomorrow, by the way. Ridiculous. So go ahead and go to the next one. So it kind of gives you an idea here, talking about the tennis court. So before I get to talking about what's on there, you can see in the background, that is literally the tennis court at Versailles that they had it. So it's a little bit different than what we think of tennis courts nowadays, but that was a tennis court. I mean, granted, the statue wasn't there and the stuff all the way on the far right, but that's what the idea was. So that's the building with it. It's made out of, you know, there's clay, dirt on the ground. So that's kind of what the tennis court actually looked like. So here's what happened. So they're locked out, like I said. They were outraged because they were locked out of this meeting that literally wasn't happening. So they go to the tennis court and they say, we will assemble here and we will not leave until a new system of government is created and a constitution. And they're able to convince some members of the first and the second estate to join them. Some, you know, a handful of people here and there to join them. So it's almost a universal, they can say that, look, everybody agrees with this, that all of this is bad. And so they do this and they're like, we will not leave this tennis court until we get what we want. And what they do is they create a whole new system of government. They create what is known as the National Assembly. And the National Assembly will represent all people equally instead of making it based on how much wealth you have or what social class you're in. And so that National Assembly will be the new system of government moving forward. In that, they demand that we must now make a constitution. So there's their first deal. It's like, all right, we can leave the tennis court. We are now making the National Assembly, this national organization of people that will represent us and voted people, and they'll vote on issues, and it'll be great. And the first thing they need to do is make a constitution. So that is a huge, I mean, the tennis court oath is widely a famous deal. It's still celebrated in France today. As you can see, it's a huge part of Versailles. You can go see with a statue of people standing up and demanding these rights of the people of France and the third estate and the injustices. And how dare they lock us out when in reality they were never locked out because the meeting wasn't happening till the next day. But it sets forth this moving boulder that cannot be stopped. The momentum has begun and nobody can stop it. So go ahead and go to the next one. So it comes down to it. Question. The question is, and you guys need to vote as a class. So once you're all done, you can vote as a class. What is their homework tonight? You guys, so as we can see with the system of government now in France, you guys have a vote. You will be considered the National Assembly. You need to vote as a class if you have homework or not. After you guys do that, or while you're waiting to do that, play the video on the next slide. If you have any questions, write them down. You're welcome to email them to me or just say them for me the next time that we're in class.